So there's this research approach in science called community science. Sometimes it's called citizen science. And it's where everyday people send in data or information to help scientists answer big questions, especially because you can get a lot more numbers of input that way. Well, here in Massachusetts, we have a team of canine citizen scientists. The dogs are not actually doing, you know, the research themselves, but their DNA is helping researchers at MIT, Harvard, UMass Medical School solve some real mysteries about dog personality and dog breed. And this came from a hunt to crowdsource information that could help us better treat human diseases too, which I just find fascinating. I mean, we've talked on this show before about the special relationship between canines and humans and our puppy companions, but this takes it to a whole new level. So we're looking forward to talking about it. First up, Eleanor Carlson. She is the founder and chief scientist of Darwin's Ark, which is a collaborative science project from Harvard, MIT, and the UMass Chan Medical School. Eleanor, welcome.
Thank you.
All right, first, Darwin's Ark is a, it's not like the such and such labs. That's a pretty specific name. You got to start there. Why is it called Darwin's Ark?
So we actually started by calling it Darwin's Dogs because we study evolution, and so Darwin seemed relevant, and we were studying dogs. But actually, a couple of years in, I decided that even though we couldn't do cats yet, that I wanted to make sure we had species flexibility. And so that's when we came up with the name Darwin's Ark.
So it really is the combination of evolution and the Bible, basically.
Well, it was the idea that we wanted to be able to include all of the animals. Fantastic. We didn't want to restrict ourselves to just dogs because there's a lot of different species out there that people have close relationships with.
Okay, but for now, you are restricted to dogs. And explain to us, what are you doing with our little canine scientists?
Yeah, so it turns out that dogs get a lot of what we tend to call them in dogs behavioral disorders. So they get something called compulsive disorder. And we'd been studying that for years. And we kind of got stuck because we didn't have enough dogs signed up for our project.
So I'm going to time out there. Just explain what compulsive disorder is for folks.
Yeah. So compulsive disorder is basically, we think it's sort of similar to human OCD. So it's basically when the dogs are doing a behavior that would be otherwise normal, like chasing their tails, but they're doing it so much, you know, hours and hours a day, that it kind of disrupts their quality of life. And they tend to get treated with the same drugs that we use in people that have OCD. And the drugs actually don't work particularly well in dogs or in people. And there's a real need to understand the causes of diseases like OCD if we're going to develop better therapies for people.
So you look at it in dogs, but you don't have a big enough number.
Yeah, we were studying it in Doberman Pinschers who had this weird behavior that they called flank sucking, which is basically where they chew on themselves. And we did a small study with about 200 dogs, and we found one gene, and it was really interesting. But then we kind of got stuck because we couldn't find more dogs to enroll. But I was talking to somebody about my research one day, and I realized that every time I tell anybody that I work on dog genomics, the first thing that they do if they own a dog is pull out their phone and tell me all about them and show me a picture. And I realized that this was actually an opportunity to get many, many, many dogs signed up for our project and find out all about them because, you know, the really unique thing about pets and dogs especially is that people know so much about their own dogs.
I know way too much about my dogs. All right, so enter our next guest. So Margie Alonzo is also in the studio here with us. Margie is executive director of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants Foundation and an expert in dog behavior. So welcome to you too, Margie.
Thank you.
So we're going to start with your pooch, who then you enrolled in Darwin's Ark, right?
I did, because Eleanor made me. Yes, Nellie's a beagle, although I'm, as I've said before.
We confirmed she's definitely a beagle.
She thinks she's a beagle. She's not. I mean, beagles, I think beagles are not dogs. I think beagles are part dog, part cat, part raccoon, and part goat. But this has not been proven by science yet. We're waiting.
So you enroll Nellie, and what kinds of information does Nellie provide to the...
She's a beagle.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
All right.
She's super beagle-y.
And that's what's the other space that's interesting here. And I do want to flag for listeners, our Radio Boston, at Radio Boston Twitter account has a picture of Nellie in front of a flower that is very boopable. So if you are that kind of Twitter follower, you should go take a look. So part of what happens then is we discover through this research, you've got what, 18,000 dogs that you've profiled in some way or another?
Yeah, so in the paper we published, we had 18,000 dogs. We've talked about the project an awful lot since then, and it turns out we now have, I think, over 38,000 dogs signed up for the project. It's pretty fantastic.
And a lot of them Massachusetts dogs.
Yes.
Okay. So, Margie, you hinted at what is some of the other thing that we're finding, which is it turns out we have a lot of stereotypes about dogs. You know, beagles howl and eat a lot of trash, like you said, part raccoon and part goat, right? We have all these stereotypes, and it turns out not so much.
So it's a really complicated question, but dogs, I think, and Eleanor, correct me if I say this incorrectly, but the sort of the behavior the spectrum of behaviors within a breed are only slightly different than the spectrum of behaviors within all dogs, so that dogs don't act differently than breeds very much. Now, certainly, there are some behaviors, mostly to do with the predatory sequence, that are very specific to some breeds. Border collies are better at herding than beagles. In fact, you should really not get a beagle to herd if you really need a herder. But there may be a beagle that's great at herding somewhere out there.
All right. It's so possible. To start here, as we enter into this dog behavior stage, I want to play a little bit of a lightning round. So I'm going to give a dog breed, and the two of you are just going to blurt out the stereotype for that dog.
You're going to be
breed.
Much better at this than I am.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. All right. So, ready? So, Margie, we expect you to kind of win on this. Ready?
Already won.
Pit bulls.
Two stereotypes on this, actually. One stereotype is that they're vicious and aggressive, and the other is that they are always sweet and kissy.
So, and those are both stereotypes.
They're both stereotypes.
German shepherds. Oh, come on, Eleanor, you can do this one.
Yeah,
two stereotypes. One is that they are always going to protect you and be loyal, and the other is that they are vicious and aggressive.
See, I would have thought the stereotype with German Shepherd was just wicked smart, that they're really smart.
Three
dogs.
Stereotypes.
The interesting thing about these stereotypes is they tend to vary between countries and things like that, too.
Well, yeah.
Different people believe different things about the breeds, but they all believe them quite strongly.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do one more because I have a...
So maybe we're all losing in this because
that's right.
One of the stereotypes is that they are very convenient.
So, okay. All right. So let's just do one more. Yorkie, because I have a Yorkie at home. I have two dogs.
Adorable or bitey?
Okay. Bossy was the one I would But that might be based on
maybe personal
experience.
Adorable and bitey.
So here's what we learned then, Eleanor. As you look across this, and I want to... It took me a couple of times to figure out a way to explain this that kept it simple. There are things that may have, because of the Darwin side of things, may have evolved some in a breed. But just because it's evolved in a breed doesn't mean your dog of that breed will have that behavior. And in fact, your dog of that breed might have some wildly different behavior.
Exactly. I think the question of whether it evolved in the breed is a little bit weird, but I won't get into the complexities of that right now. I will say that when we asked owners about their dogs, they basically reported within every breed kind of everything across the spectrum of the behaviors that we were asking about. And this was a little counterintuitive until you talk to people, you know, that have not owned just one Yorkie, but have owned five different Yorkies across the years. And they will tell you all the ways in which their Yorkies were different from one another. And so it kind of makes sense once you think about it that way. But that it kind of goes against this idea that if you adopt a dog of a particular breed, you're going to know for sure what kind of personality you're going to get.
And that's a problem, Margie, because as somebody who trains dogs and works with families who get dogs, people kind of bank on these stereotypes as they are making choices, whether it's a rescue dog or a purchase of a breed, as they make choices about how to bring a dog into their home.
I think if we look at breed descriptions, it would gain a little clarity here about where the problems lie. So if we look at a dog that is supposed to be good with children, air quotes, that don't work very well on the radio, you know, dogs within that given breed might often be great with kids, but some won't be. And so then a family might go and get a dog of that breed because they're supposed to be great with kids. And then that dog either wants nothing to do with kids or that dog's great with one kid, but put them in a family with five kids and not so much, you know, and things happen. And so I think it's so important that we look at the dog in front of us and not at the mythology around what a dog is supposed to be according to a breed description. And so, you know, mythology may be a better use of the word than stereotype, right? Because we really do have Rin Tin Tin as saving people, and Lassie is, you know, constantly
going
getting
home and
that
getting
idiot.
Someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That kid is just not learning, and you know, and all of these things are happening. But in fact, you know, for every collie saving Timmy, there's another one pushing Timmy in the well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Possibly, I don't know, but. there's a malevolent collie out there somewhere, you know, and I'm not sure that that's really a bad collie. It's just that it's just a dog.
Yeah.
And so we have this mythology around breeds, and we are very, very tied to those. And people get really upset when we challenge that. And then they tend to sort of say, oh, go ahead. You know, I mean, I think, you know, one of the problems that, with this paper was that people are saying, this is nonsense. Go ahead. You know, and now people are gonna want to adopt a Malinois for infants or something like that. It's like, no. I mean, maybe, but that would be pretty silly, right?
And Malinois are big, strong dogs. That we at least
know. They're very, what's the word? Eleanor and I occasionally have large arguments over sushi, and they're very productive.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eleanor.
My role in dog research is always a bit strange because, so I've never actually owned a dog, and I only started learning about dogs as a graduate student when I got pulled into dog genomics.
Yeah, you got to fix that.
Yeah, so I'm really kind of weak when it comes to actually each dog breed and what it's supposed to be like.
Drivey. Can we just say drivey?
Okay. Yeah.
Labeling is a terrible thing. It really is. But these are high-energy dogs that are better suited for jumping into, you know, through a closed window in a car and pulling out the bad guy than maybe pushing a baby carriage. But they could do that, too.
All right, so let me come back to you for a minute, Eleanor. So the big aha moment in the research for you, and what are you doing with that aha moment now?
So I think the really fantastic thing about what we did was that we basically went out and said any dog can sign up for our project. We don't care what breed it is. We don't care if it's a mixed breed. We don't care if you have absolutely no idea where your dog came from. And that was different from a lot of the ways that they'd done dog genetics in the past where they were really focused on the breeds. And it turns out that those mixed breed dogs, dogs that have ancestry from many different breeds, are probably going to be particularly powerful for studying genetics.
Why? Because they kind of, that is fascinating.
Yeah, so they kind of take what's in the different breeds, but then they mix it all up. And so you can kind of look at them and figure out. So we had this worry when we went in. We had a whole lot of surveys, and we asked people about their dogs. And we were sort of worried that, you know, people would tell us, give us answers to the surveys based on what they'd been told about the breeds. If they had a purebred dog, you know, labs are good with kids. And so they were going to tell us that labs are good with kids because they'd heard that, not because it was about their own dog. But in the mutts, they've mixed up all the ancestry and you can't actually tell what breeds are in there.
So there's
no bias. And we can actually pick out things like dogs that have more ancestry from beagles. So say they're 40% beagle as opposed to 10% beagle are more likely to be howling, you know.
Shocking.
And so this is not a surprise to her at all. Also, bloodhounds. I was very reassured when I found this. I would have been weird if we hadn't found it. But it just kind of points to that idea that we can actually get at the genetics a bit in the mutts in a way that we couldn't when we were just looking at the purebred dogs.
All right. So one more question to you before I go back to Margie. Did it turn out that between the mutts and the purebred dogs, are there some dominant breeds from the pool here in Massachusetts or the regional pool that you're getting?
Yeah, so if you take all of the dogs in the U.S. or all of the dogs in New England and put them all into a bucket and mix them all up, definitely don't do this. Overall, there's about 17% of the DNA that's in there. Is it 17%? It might have been, 13% of the DNA that was in there would actually be of American Pit Bull Terrier ancestry. So that's the most prevalent breed
percentage.
Ancestry. I think after that was Labrador Retriever. And I can't remember which one came after that. But yeah, so the most common one is that American Pit Bull Terrier
ancestry.
And
of course, I would have guessed some kind of doodle. Right?
There's
although, wait.
We did notice that there were a lot of dogs out there that were 50% poodle.
All right. So, Margie, let me come back to you. For those who are listening who are now deeply discouraged because they now have no idea if they're going to get a dog, how they could possibly tell what kind of animal it's going to be for them, what are some things that people can reliably check for or look for in getting a dog based on what we've now learned from this research study here in the Commonwealth?
Dogs are not a commodity. Dogs are a member of the family. So the first thing I would suggest is make a list of what your expectations are. If you don't go for walks very often, but you're getting a dog because you're pretty sure you want to summit mountains, and you're just going to do that if you get a dog, you know, I agree. You might go for more walks with a dog, but maybe you don't get a dog that has to go for 20-mile walks every day. Make a list of what you want and what your expectations and hopes are. And then find, first of all, at the size and shape of a dog. As Eleanor has said before, if you put together all the dogs that run fast and keep breeding them, eventually it's going to look like a greyhound, right?
Got it.
So a Yorkie might not be the best hiking companion, but a
they
bigger
are
dog,
not.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
They don't have knees,
right.
but you know, I mean, they're you know. So the first thing is find out what you want with this dog, and a fantasy of what a dog is important. You know, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It matters what you want with this dog. And if you want a dog for the kids, you're getting another kid. You know, it's not going to be the kid's dog. It's going to be your dog. And then accept that dog for who they are, just like you would accept any child you had, if you have kids, for who they are. And, you know, we expect dogs to learn everything in 6 weeks of class that we sort of pay attention to. But how you train, call it training for dogs and teaching for kids. That's wrong. So teach your dog to be the dog you want and make expectations happen.
All right. That was Margie Alonzo, who is the executive director of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants Foundation, and Eleanor Carlson, the researcher from Darwin's Ark, founder and lead scientist there. We learned a lot today. Thanks to both of you.